Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. We're back with another season preview podcast today and we're going to be talking about the Atlanta Hawks. And to talk about the Atlanta Hawks, I'm joined by the man behind #basketball and one of the driving force behind All-Star 5, Joseph Mamone. Joey, how are you going?
G'day, mate. Good. Had my morning coffee, so I'm good to go.
You're all pumped and ready to talk about the Atlanta Hawks?
Yep. Good to go.
Let's go. Before we do that, though, actually, give your website a bit of a plug. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter. Just tell everyone the things that you're doing and you've got planned for your site this season.
How much time do we have? Take up a bit of time.
Yeah, let's keep it short and sweet. But let's get some info out there because your site is fantastic.
I'll give you the Cliff Note version.
Cool.
You can find me on Twitter at #basketball. You can find me on Reddit. I'm on Reddit far too much. You can catch me in the Fantasy Basketball Reddit. It's a good community going over there. My website, #basketball.com. It's pretty much just a website. It's got some fantasy basketball tools on there. It's got a nice little blog there. It's got some custom Twitter feeds, so it makes it a bit easier to do your team research. And All-Star 5. It's pretty much a website where you can ask a bunch of fantasy experts their advice on fantasy basketball, really. Got a couple of pretty cool people on there. There's this guy called Josh Lloyd. I don't know if you heard of him.
He's definitely the lowest of the five so-called experts.
So he seems to know a bit about fantasy basketball, so it's good to have him on board. We got Seth Klein on there, Mark Roberts, Matt Smith, and myself. So you can pretty much, you can ask us whatever you like, really. If you want to know what our favorite color is, you can ask that. Spoiler alert for those wondering, mine's green.
Mine's blue, so that's covered that already.
There we go. Those two questions are covered. That's actually ready to go out in beta once I get off this podcast.
Cool.
So I'll send some invites out for that in about an hour.
That sounds good.
So that's me.
And what's the website address? AllStar5.com, correct?
Yep, AllStar5.com.
So if you are interested in that, it's a place where you can ask opinions of the five of us, team questions, trade questions, draft questions, keeper questions, whatever you want, and you can get five of us chime in on an answer in a bigger sort of forum than 140 characters on Twitter. So head across to allstar5.com. I said Joey's going to have it up pretty soon and ready to go. It's up now and you can go across and register your details, but it's going to be up and ready for beta testing pretty soon. So you can go across and check that out. But let's talk Atlanta Hawks now, Joey. They're a team that I think surprised people last season. They suffered some terrible injuries in the 2013-14 season with Al Horford basically ruining the year, finished out of the playoffs. Last year, they were the best team in the NBA for stretches of the season. Obviously, things came crashing down at the end. What do we think of their team this year? They had some losses, some gains. They're not going to be a 60-win team again, are they? Or it's going to be very difficult, I think.
Given they're in the East, chances are they're going to still finish in maybe third or fourth position. But for a team that was so close to sort of winning it last season, they didn't really make the changes you would expect them to do. They got rid of, they let Carroll go and they didn't really replace him with a quality player. So, and I'm not counting Tim Hardaway Jr. as a quality player, by the way.
I don't think he's any good. He was horrible in New York, and I just had the New York Knicks podcast yesterday and we spoke about how bad he was for the Knicks, but there is a chance for some sort of redemption for him in Atlanta because, you know, Damari Carroll was horrible before he got to Atlanta as well. And he was a player who couldn't get minutes on a terrible Jazz team. There is a possibility that Budenholzer goes to Hardaway, look, mate, you were trash, but you've got to actually start doing something different. You can't just be out there jacking shots and missing shots and contributing nowhere else. Now, there's a chance he just goes, I don't care. I'm going to keep doing me. But I think there is a chance that he turns it around somewhat. He's never going to be a great player, I don't think, but I think he can be better than what he was in New York. But that's not setting the bar very high.
He needs to be told that he's not in New York anymore and he needs to actually get his stuff together.
Yeah, that's pretty. Look, you know what? And that might be the case because yeah, sometimes a change to the player's environment can be all they need. Just in terms of, hey, look, when I'm not expendable, I've been moved around, I've been, you know, traded away for an unproven first round draft choice outside the lottery. What am I doing? Can I turn this around? And he would have been given some pretty serious home truths, I reckon, by the Atlanta coaching staff. Like, come here, do this, or you're not going to get playing time. I'm fairly confident that's what would have happened. And he makes a really intriguing player for this season. The other guys that they added, Justin Holliday, who is going to compete with Tim Hardaway for minutes on the bench, and that wing spot. He's a guy that had some decent games in Golden State, but really he's never going to push for minutes for the Warriors. Jason Richardson comes across. I don't know why. I don't know what he's offering to this team at all. Veteran leadership, but really he's not going to see much. But the interesting one to me is Tiago Splitter, who they got for pretty much nothing in terms of getting it from the Spurs, as the Spurs were trying to clear cap space to sign LaMarcus Aldridge. Splitter comes across, and he provides very, very great, oh, not very great because that's horrible English, but he provides some significant backup minutes at the big man position. So they're going to run Millsap and Horford out there as the starting four and five. We've heard for years that Horford prefers to play as a four. They're going to get that opportunity to do that this year. Splitter is going to play with Horford. He's going to play with Millsap. These guys are going to get the bulk of the minutes in the front court, especially with Mike Scott likely going away for years. And by going away, I mean going to jail. And Mike Muscala being average, Elton Brand, you know, retiring. Splitter is going to get big minutes. And we have short memories that back in 2013-14, when the Spurs won the championship, Tiago Splitter was a starter, and he was a very quality starter, and he was vitally important to that team with the defense he provides. He's not starting on Atlanta, but he's going to be a 25-minute to 27-minute big man, I'm pretty certain. What's your take on Splitter coming across?
Yeah, I do like that the team willing to take on his $9 million contract is the team that's trying to be like the Spurs. The way I see Atlanta is they don't really have a backup four, but I don't think that's too much of an issue given they've got Splitter. They're going to give him, say, 24 minutes a game. He's not going to get great fantasy numbers, but he's a guy, kind of guy that is consistent. You know what you're going to get with him. Yep. You're going to get maybe 8 to 9 points a game, 5-6 rebounds. You're going to get a block. He's got good percentages, so if he fits your team build and you're going for those categories, is this a good player to sort of have at the bottom of your roster?
Yeah, definitely.
And the way Atlanta set up their offense is it works with primarily two big guys, and they both need to know how to pass. And Splitter fits that model perfectly.
Yep. Now, you're right. They don't have a backup four, really. But what they'll do is I think they'll just play Al Horford as the backup four when they put Splitter in, and they'll just rotate those three guys. But, you know, Millsap can play five sometimes. Splitter can sometimes play at the four as well, because although he's a center, Duncan played so much center when they were together anyway that, yeah, Splitter can go out, and he doesn't have an outside shot, but he doesn't necessarily have to play, you know, Andre Drummond style sitting under the rim. He can shoot a little bit. His percentages are good. He's a guy who could approach a steal and a block. And you're right, he's not going to move the needle hugely on fantasy teams, but he's going to be a solid contributor in that 100 to 150 sort of range. Probably 100's pushing it a little bit too high, but he's going to be able to produce some pretty significant value for a guy that you may have disregarded considering all the injury problems he had last year. So he's someone to keep an eye on for next season. Definitely, I think that he's going to surprise a lot of people. I've got him ranked just outside the top 100 because of his efficiency, because of those defensive stats there. They can be really key to your fantasy team. And again, I stress this all the time, Joey, that, you know, one block a game and 0.8 steals a game, the numbers are so small, but they're so important. You know, if you average 0.8 blocks for your team, you're going to win that category most weeks. If you average a steal a game, you're going to win that category most weeks. So getting a guy like this as a center as well who gets that steal, it can be vitally important.
Yeah, given head-to-head, one steal could be the difference between you actually winning that category or not. And having a guy who actually occasionally gets a steal as opposed to a guy who never actually gets a steal for a whole week, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's like you can compare Splitter to like Nikola Pekovic, who gets nothing, no blocks, no steals, no anything, no assists, whereas Splitter's going to go out there, he's going to score less points, probably get less rebounds, but he's going to give you better steals, better blocks, better assists, better percentages.
Yeah, that's one of the main reasons why I'm a little bit skeptical of Tim Hardaway Jr. His yeah, non-scoring counting stats, so rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. He played 24 minutes a game last season for the Knicks. And what roughly would you think his non-scoring counting stats would have been on average?
I would say he would have averaged less than 3.5 combined.
He got 4.5. And okay. To put that in perspective, Cephalosha played 5 less minutes a game and got that in just rebounded category itself.
Yeah.
Other than threes and scoring, Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't really do it for me.
2.2 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 0.3 steals, 0.2 blocks. And that's actually a massive increase in what he did in his rookie year, where he was 2.9 combined in those categories. And that is woeful. So look, if I had to say something positive, because I'm sort of making a pact this year to be a bit more positive about things. He played one more minute last season compared to his rookie season, but he increased those things. His rebounds went up by 50%. His assists went up by over 100%. His steals actually went down, but his blocks went up by 100%. So he actually improved those categories. And they're still horrific. Don't get me wrong. They're still useless. But the fact that they went up that much is a decent sign. And then the new coaching stuff. Look, if he got 2 assists and 3 rebounds and 0.6 steals, that's another big increase. And it doesn't make him great, but it makes him bearable if you're really looking for a guy who's, I need some scoring, I need some threes, and he's not going to kill me in other areas if he can just contribute a little bit. So I do hold out a little bit of hope for him there. Now,
and given his name, he has to develop some kind of killer crossover at some stage of his career.
You would hope. Yeah, that's a family embarrassment otherwise. Now,
that'd be an awkward Christmas dinner. If you
didn't. The wing position in Atlanta, though, is interesting because they lost Amari Carroll. I would say that Korver will probably slide to the 3 a little bit more. So there's going to be an open spot in the starting lineup. Thabo Sefolosha is there. You touched on him, but he's coming off a broken leg, suffered at the hands of the NYPD, so thanks for that. There's Holiday, there's Hardaway, and there's Kent Bazemore. Hardly an inspiring quartet of players. Who do you think gets the biggest role there?
Once Cephalosha is healthy, I think he's the logical replacement to start. But in the meantime, I'm pretty high on, not pretty high, but I think Kent Bazemore's the guy. Got some stats for you. In 22 games last season, he averaged between 20 and 30 minutes. In those 22 games, he put up 8 points, not great, but he got a 2 assists, 1.3 steals, and 0.5 block. But where that gets interesting then is he played 7 games where he played starter minutes. In those 7 games, he averaged 34 minutes, got 11 points, got a 3, got 5.5 rebounds, a couple of assists, 1.3 steals, and a block. So if he manages to become the starter while Cephalosha is injured, or he manages to win the starting spot, he's got that 1-3, 1-steal, 1-block potential written all over him.
I am so far from being a fan of Kent Bazemore.
Sorry, what was that?
I'm so far from being a fan of Kent Bazemore.
You're not on the hype train?
No, not at all. Like, hit that stretch with the Lakers where everyone was, it's all Kent Bazemore all the time, but he was just scoring and not doing a lot. But you're right. Look, his other numbers were okay last year. His per 36 numbers, he was at 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, a block a game. Only 10.6 points per 36 minutes is not good. But 6 rebounds and those other peripheral numbers are decent. And Cephalosha is not a big stat accumulator. So from a fantasy point of view, you probably want Bazemore in that position because he is going to be able to put up probably better all-round numbers. Now, Cephalosha will likely get you more rebounds. He can hit threes as well, and he can get steals. But across the board, Bazemore does give you more numbers. But I just don't think that he's a good player.
Yeah, I don't think he's a good player, but the minutes are going to be there for someone to take up. And I think given Bazemore's been in the system, he knows how to play it relatively well. He might have a little bit of the trust by the coaching staff, so he might get some of those minutes early on. And if he gets the minutes, then there's some potential for him to do something. His percentages aren't great.
Yeah.
But the minutes are there for someone to take.
He's one of those guards who shoots a horrible free throw percentage, and that's yeah. A real issue. So we have to watch out for that. I think the guy that everyone wants as a fantasy, from a fantasy point of view, to get those minutes in the backcourt is Dennis Schroeder, but it's unlikely they're going to play him with Jeff Teague for extended periods of time because it's just not going to work all that way. They're not big guys. It's not going to work that well playing them together. They both need the ball in their hand a lot. They will play some there, but I don't imagine they're going to play 35 minutes next to each other. Fantasy owners would love it, but it's just not going to happen.
there's going to be some matchups where they can get away with playing Teague and Schroeder, but there aren't going to be too many teams that have a small shooting guard that won't back him down in the post and score him every single time.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a nightmare defensively if they decide to go that route. And you can do it for small amounts of time, but as a full-time starter, it's not really going to work. We touched on them losing Damari Carroll. John Jenkins is the other guy. They lost another player out of that wing rotation. He provided pretty much zero for them anyway, so it's not a big loss for the Hawks. What about the young guys on this team? There's not a lot to talk about, really, in terms of the players who were drafted from the last couple of seasons. We have Marcus Ericsson and Demetris Agravanis, who were drafted in the second round this year. They're not coming over. They're both staying in Europe. Lamar Patterson, who was a second-round draft choice last year, but the player that I am the most intrigued about out of these young players on this team is Eddie Tavares, a behemoth of a man, let's be honest. He is gigantic. He's about 7'3", 7'4". He was drafted last season. He came across. He looked good from what I heard in Summer League, because as soon as I went to watch the Hawks play, he got injured and I didn't get to see him. But he's a shot-blocking force, and the Hawks do need a real rim protector. Like, Millsap and Horford are okay, but they're not rim protectors. Now, I'm not saying that Tavares is going to go out there and play big minutes, but there is a non-zero chance he starts to have a real big defensive impact on this team, especially if injuries start occurring and Splitter gets hurt or Mike Muscala gets hurt and they have to put Tavares into a 15 to 20 minute role, and he could go out there and get two blocks in that small amount of minutes. Do you have any thoughts on these guys? Are they all just players you just want to ignore for the most part?
Yeah, there's a bit of hype around this kid. It's hard to see rookies getting consistent minutes on teams that are trying to win the championship.
Yep.
So in a couple of years' time, maybe in a dynasty league, some of these guys might be worth looking at. But if you're in win now mode, the only young player on Atlanta I'd be looking at is Schroeder.
That's probably right. Tavares is deep dynasty sort of stuff. If you're hoping in 3 years' time you want to get a 20-minute center who's going to block two shots. The other guys, I don't think we need to worry too much. Let's look at the next section, Joe. We're going to talk about breakout candidates. So players you think can go from good to great, or irrelevant to decent, role players, or however you sort of want to phrase this. Who's a guy that you like on this team that you think can have their best season or some sort of breakout this year?
Atlanta are pretty consistent. They're not going to change their game plan a whole lot. So the only guy I can think of that's going to improve a little bit are either Bazemore or really Cephalosha, who just by volume of minutes that their stats are going to increase. But one thing about, say, if Cephalosha does start, all the other starters' usage rate are going to go up a little bit, because on offense, Cephalosha doesn't really do a whole lot. He's a great defender, but on offense, he just doesn't really demand the ball a whole lot.
Go ahead.
Guys like Teague, Millsap, Horford, Korver, they might get a couple extra points here and there.
The thing that I'm worried about with Cephalosha is his last season in Oklahoma City, he wasn't the same guy. Now, he was never a great contributor, but he had declined. His defense had declined. His 3-point shooting was not quite the same. And that makes me worry that maybe, like, he's not a young guy. He's been in the league for quite a while. Maybe he is starting to decline, and that leg injury is not going to be a good thing for him heading into this season. So that might be your minutes for Bazemore, as we touched on before. But the guy that I think is going to start to have a breakout is Dennis Schroeder. I think he had a sort of mini breakout last season. But it wasn't as good as what we remember. Like, if we think back and go, oh, Dennis Schroeder was amazing. Yeah, he was pretty good, but he probably wasn't as good as what we think. The last month of the season, he only averaged 12.7 points, 4.5 assists, which is really valuable, 1.2 threes, but 0.2 steals is horrific for a point guard. Like, that is not good. He shot 41% from the field, also not good. 2.6 rebounds, that's not ideal. 1.2 threes is okay. I think we remember back really fondly about how good he was, and he wasn't that good, but the 4.5 assists that he got off the waiver wire was key. He can do that again this year. That gives him value in standard leagues, just the 4.5 assists only, because we know, Joe, that when we get towards the end of a draft, there are no assists basically anywhere, and he's a guy that you might be able to get that from. The other numbers are going to hurt, though, because I just don't see him getting much playing time with Teague. The only thing I say here is that Jeff Teague, for the last 3 months of last season, averaged only 29 minutes a game. Now, some of that was them resting their players, but some of it was him getting benched. And he got benched a lot down the stretch, you know, sitting out entire fourth quarters. And it makes you think, okay, do they not believe fully in Jeff Teague? Could they put Schroeder into a bigger role? It's not out of the realms of possibility. Teague is not 100% set in stone as a starter, no matter what, I don't think. I think that there is some debate amongst the coaching staff as maybe we want to go with Schroeder at some stage this season. And Teague has got such a friendly contract that if they wanted to trade him, they would get some pretty good value back for him because teams would be clamoring to get that $8 million for a starting point guard.
The thing about Schroeder is, the way I see it is, he had pretty terrible field goal percentages as a rookie last season, but
yep.
Given he's had a year under his belt, he's destined to actually pump that up 1 or 2%. So that should be borderline close to being respectful this season, you'd think. You think another year under his system, one knock he had on his game is he's a bit reckless on offense, so he piles up the turnovers in the minutes he does play. But he has the potential to actually be a decent player, and by the time his rookie contract runs out, he'll be 25. So he'll be sort of close to peak age. So once he hits that age, he's either going to get paid by another team if he does develop the way that Atlanta are hoping to, or he's going to take the starting spot.
I would agree. I think that he is primed to be an Eric Bledsoe type of guy that plays under his rookie contract as a backup and then hits the big time somewhere as a starter. I don't think he's ever going to be as good as Eric Bledsoe, but I think that in dynasty leagues, you're going to have to invest a couple more seasons of him having middling minutes. I said a breakout could come and he could overtake Teague. That is not out of the question. But I think that once he gets into that situation, they're going to have to make a decision. Do we trade Teague? What do we do with Schroeder? Because he does have starter potential sort of written all over him for some team in the league. I don't know where it's going to be. And if you're going to invest in Dynasty, you invest in him now and get him at a cheaper price. But there is that opportunity for him, I think, this season. If something doesn't go right with Teague and they do actually think that these guys deserve more of a timeshare, it's something to keep an eye on because, as I said, the last 3 months of last season, this is, you know, heading back into January, Jeff Teague was playing 29 minutes a game on average throughout 2016, which is not much for a starting point guard. And by not much, it's very, very small. And Schroeder was the main reason for that. And Teague was getting benched for a lot of these games. And it's something that we really need to see how things play out throughout the preseason. Teague is going to be the starter to start the season, but it's not locked in.
Yeah. One thing we also need to remember about Atlanta is last season when they had their seed locked up, they were just resting their starters like crazy. And that's the worst time for you to have players missing out on games because that's fantasy playoffs for us. So I remember last season they had, I think the last couple of weeks of the finals, they had Millsap, Korver, Teague. They're all taking it in turns to have a rest.
Yep, they'd sit like three guys one day, two guys the next day.
Yeah.
There's I'm going back and looking at Teague's game log. There's a lot of games here where he's playing 25 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 33, 29, 27, 25, 38. No, sorry, not 38, 28, 23. 23, 28, 31. So there are some limited minutes. There's some where he's playing normal minutes as well, but he was sort of up and down, mixed in with the resting. The resting I don't think is going to be as big of an issue this year because I don't think they're going to be in that position where they're just locked in as the number one seed as easily as what they were last season. So I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem. But we know that if that does happen, that the Hawks have got absolutely no problem in just sitting their guys down, even to a greater extent than what the Spurs have done in previous years.
I think, from memory, I think Teague finished, even though he rested, his minutes got reduced towards the end of the season, he still finished top 10 in steals and assists.
Yeah, that's probably right. And what he also is he's also a very good field goal percentage guy for a point guard. You can expect over 45% shooting from a point guard. That's really, really top notch for him. An awesome free throw shooter as well. We've got him projected currently at 31 minutes, which I think feels about right, but again, it could go the other way. But if he gets a solid role, Jeff Teague, which we think he should, he's going to be a very, very handy fan. He's been a really favorite fantasy player of mine. His current ADP is 41. That's way too low. I'm happy grabbing him inside the top 30 in most sort of situations.
I checked Yahoo's ADP last night, and I honestly thought there was something wrong with my computer because Lawson is getting drafted before Teague.
That is ludicrous. If that's true, which I don't doubt you, Joe, that is ludicrous because I can't. How is it possible?
I don't understand. I shut down my browser because I thought there was something wrong with my computer. Logged back in. Lawson's still above Teague. Rebooted my computer thinking surely there has to be a setting that's gone wrong. Logged back in. Lawson was still above Teague. So now I just don't refer to Yahoo's ADP anymore. Kind of work out what was wrong with it.
Well, ESPN's ADP data isn't up yet, so hopefully we get that soon because their draft's just opened. It's it's definitely frustrating when you see things like Lawson wasn't as good as Teague last season, let alone now he's going to Houston and possibly a backup role that he's going to be better. It's pretty strange to me. What about a sleeper player, Joey? Who have you got as a guy who, you know, when looking at some of these draft positions and rankings and stuff, who do you think is going to be a bit of a sleeper guy?
I think I have to admit, I have a man crush on Korver. I think he's underrated as a player. I could be the only one, but I like to get Korver on at least one of my teams every season. I just think, given the season he had last year, he just had a phenomenal field goal 3-point percentage. I think he got really close to 50-50 and 90. I think he was only a couple of percentages off. For a guy that averages close to 3 3-pointers a game on excellent percentages, he's a great guy to get to pair up with your centers that are good at the three-throw line as well. So you can pair those kind of guys up together and head-to-head, you're pretty safe with field goal percentage as well. And this might be a little bit of a stretch. He was one of 5 players last year to average over 2 threes and half a block a game.
Yeah, the blocks seem to come out of nowhere.
He's a sneaky guy when it comes to the blocks. I remember last season there was a couple of games where he'd just pull out 2 blocks, 3 block games. They make a bit of a difference when they're coming from a guy you're not expecting to get those stats.
Oh, they're huge. Any guard or any 3-point specialist who's getting blocks is massive. That's why Klay Thompson had such a big rise in the rankings, because he was at about 0.7, 0.8 blocks a game last year. And James Harden was up to 0.7, 0.8 blocks a game as well. And that's massive to get from those guys. As I said, you only need to average 0.7 to 0.8 blocks for your whole team to win that category most weeks. And if you're getting it, and then you combine it with a center who gets 2.5 blocks, and then you get these guys who you should be getting 0.2 to 0.3 blocks out of, it's a huge bump. Before I talk a bit more on Korver, we did get a stat come in here from Glenn McComb, who's on Twitter at, what's he at, Lenny Mo. And he says, he's quoting another tweet from someone here. I think, no, he's not. It's his own tweet. Let's go through it. Double checked. Between January and April, Schroeder shot 44 from 108 from 3-point range for a percentage of 41%. And that's obviously awesome. And he's a very good 3-point shooter, Dennis Schroeder. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with them. But that is a good stat that he was able to put up that fantastic 3-point shot. And he was really reckless with his shooting in his rookie year. He shot 24% from 3 in his rookie year. He got it up to 35 last year and ended the season shooting over 40. I think if he's going to shoot over 40 for a season, he's not going to shoot over 40 for a season. But to do it for 4-month stretch is pretty impressive. So he's definitely someone to keep an eye on, Schroeder. I'll maintain that. Just that's backtracking a bit. But Korver, I'm worried. I'm worried about the 2 surgeries he's had, the elbow and the ankle. He's not young, even though he looks, you know, he looks so beautiful and handsome and all that sort of stuff. He's not young. He's been in the league for a long time. An elbow injury for a shooter, a little bit worrisome. Now, it's on his shooting arm, I'm 95% sure. I could be 95% wrong, but I think it's his shooting arm. Do you have any idea?
I would have to double check that. If being handsome was a category, Korver would be a top 5 pick.
Comfortably. He's probably top 2 or 3, I would say.
Yeah, he's up there.
But I'm worried. I'm worried that the age for him. I'm worried that the ankle injury for a shooter as well is not, you know, he doesn't have to run around, but he's got to push off those. He's got to push off his feet, and he's had ankle surgery. He's had elbow surgery. He's missing so much time, you know, throughout the off season when he's getting older. He needs to keep his conditioning up. I'm not saying he's going to drop away. And the other thing is that people have cottoned onto how good he is in fantasy. He's currently being drafted at pick 60, which, you know, last year probably could have got him at pick 80 or pick 90. At pick 60, I don't know how much more ceiling there is on pick 60 for him. How, does he become a top 50 player? I think that's pretty doubtful with his advancing age, the loss of Demarai Carroll, and the two surgeries. I reckon that's probably drafting at his ceiling. Now, what you said is fantastic. The percentages are awesome. If you can count three-point percentage in your league, he becomes a top 20 player. There's no doubt about that. With such an awesome three-point percentage on so many attempts, he basically locks that category down for you on his own. He's the best contributor in that category out of everyone in the league. So if you play three-point percentage, it's a completely different situation with Kyle Korver. But I am a little bit concerned about those couple of factors.
Yeah, the ankle injury is what is what worries me with Korver, because he's the kind of guy that he covers so much of the court. He's constantly running. He's constantly running off screens. He covers, I think, the most distance for a Hawk player. So the fact that he's coming off an ankle injury worries me a little bit. But he, last season, I had him in my team last season. The first couple of months, he was in great form. He was like a top 15 player in Yahoo's rankings.
Yep.
So once he's healthy, he's got sneaky potential to get up there. But I wouldn't be drafting him any earlier than 60.
No, and that's look, if he starts sliding and he's down to 80 or 90, then there's great value. But you have to be careful when you're outside the top 50. If you're picking someone at pick 60, and that's their ceiling, that's not a good idea. You don't want to go, okay, if he does what you think is best case scenario and it still leaves him ending up at number 60, it's not a good use of pick 60. If you pick him at pick 80 and you think he can get to pick 60, then that's better. Now we're talking. If you pick a guy at pick 60 and you think if everything breaks right, he can become top 30, that's the way to do it. It's not like I'm picking a pick 60 and his best case scenario is pick 60, because then the only way to go from there is down. And that's not a good way to look at it. Now,
yeah, the potential's there to get him in maybe pick 70, just since he's coming off all these injuries.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge possibility. So that's something to watch for. It all comes down to value, not doubting him as a player. It's like, where are you getting him and where's the value? The guy that I've got down as a sleeper is Tiago Splitter, because he's not even listed in Yahoo's ADP data. So you can grab him in the last round. And as I said, there's not much of a flyer there with him. He's not going to break out and become awesome, but he's going to be very, very solid. So if you're in a deeper league, a 14-team league, a 16-team league, grabbing him around pick 140 becomes really useful, because he's super steady, and those blocks and steals with the high percentages, it's a combination that is, it's not impossible to find, but it's pretty close to being impossible to find what he does, especially at that later point in the draft. What about a bust sort of player? Who do you think is not going to live up to the current preseason projections?
I'm not very high on Tim Hardaway Jr., to be honest. He's getting drafted ahead of guys like Jeff Green, Evan Turner, PJ Tucker, Mays Leonard. He's getting drafted ahead of Schroeder.
Yeah, that's all wrong. That shouldn't happen.
He's the kind of guy, the way I see it, he's the kind of guy that is going to have the occasional hot game where he'll drop 5 threes in a game. Everyone's going to rush to the waiver wire to pick him up, and then he's just going to sit on people's teams for 2 weeks while they wait for him to have another hot game that's just never going to come.
I would agree with that completely. The fact that he's getting picked at pick 138 is wrong. I've said that I do have some optimism for him, but I don't have that much optimism for him. I'm not picking him in drafts. I'm keeping an eye on him and thinking maybe that something happens with him, but you're right, that because he's so flashy in scoring and threes, which people love and people get wowed by big numbers. Ooh, 20 points, that's good, and it is, but it's also not good when you get one assist and one rebound to go along with it. And people do, the bigger the number, the better the player that people think. And points is the biggest category that we have. So that's something that definitely weighs people's opinions, and it does make people overreact. People were like all over him last year. Oh, Melo's out. It's all going to be Tim Hardaway now. Let's go and grab him. And he got worse. He was absolutely horrible in New York. There's no other way to put it. He was disgusting. And he has to pull his finger out basically to do something this season. And if you're picking him at pick 138, it feels like a wasted pick to me. The guy that I think is probably a little bit overrated in terms of his ranking is Al Horford at pick 14. I love Al Horford. I'm a big Al Horford fan, but at pick 14, there's a lot of other guys I'd rather go for at that spot. I'm not worried about injuries with Horford at all. I know he's had the two season-ending pectoral issues, freak injuries, not worried about it. Doesn't concern me at all, really. Horford's a really good roto player. He's solid across the board, but I think investing in him at pick 14, there are other options, especially in a head-to-head league. There are other guys I'd want to go for. When we're looking at pick 20, pick 25, that sort of range, I'm okay with it. But at pick 14, no, thank you. What's your take on Horford and that lofty draft status?
Yeah, I wouldn't be taking him that early. One thing about his injuries, they've been freak injuries. It's not like he's got a bad back or a foot problem or a leg problem that would be a concern for big men. It's like a pectoral injury that once it heals. It's not gonna, it won't be a reoccurring issue. But he does have a great field goal percentage at the volume he takes. So he's good for certain categories. He gets you a steal a game, a little bit over a block. But he just, at pick 13, you'd want your big man to get more than 16 points and 8 rebounds a game.
Yeah, definitely. He's not, at a pick 14, it's not value there as well. I just don't, I said, this is not about hating on Al Horford because I love what Al Horford can do. He's going to be an awesome player. He's going to be a really interesting free agent at season's end, but I'm not spending pick 14 in my fantasy draft on grabbing Al Horford. There are other guys I want in that situation. Who do you have as, you've already given your one. I'm getting ahead of myself here. What about a player who's limited by their playing time? So if there's someone on this team that if they're put into a situation where they get 30 minutes a game or 35 minutes a game, then they're going to become really fantasy relevant. Tim Hardaway is the anti that, as we've discussed earlier. Who's a guy that if he's in a big role, that is going to be a must-own player?
Three players we've touched on him already.
It has to be Schroeder.
If he gets 30 minutes a game, he's get on the Schroeder train.
The guy that I'll throw out there, and this is with a lot of things have to go wrong for the Hawks for this to happen, but Mike Muscala is a very, very interesting player from a fantasy perspective if he was to get minutes. Now, I was looking at it in preseason when there was the talk of Paul Millsap leaving and none of these moves had happened, that if he was going to be a starter, he was going to be standard league relevant. There's no doubt. He's per 36 numbers from last year, 14 points, 8.5 rebounds, but where it really comes in is he's over a steal, 1.5 blocks, and half a three a game as a center. He hit that big three in the playoff series against the Wizards. His field goal percentage last year, well, his percentage, we're talking about Kyle Korver's percentage. He was 55 from the field, Muscala, 88 from the free throw line, and 41 from three. That's incredible for a center. That is massive. A lot has to go right for him to get into a role where he's going to play big minutes. As I said, there's Horford, there's Millsap, there's Splitter ahead of him. Mike Scott's gone, though. I don't think we're going to see Mike Scott much this season, if at all, waiting for his trial. Muscala comes in as the fourth big man. A couple of injuries come down, and his game is really fantasy-friendly. Triple one potential, a 14 and 8 sort of guy in big minutes. And he's young. He's heading into his third season. This is when guys generally tend to improve. He's a guy that I definitely want to keep in mind. But again, a lot has to go right for it to happen. Do you have any thoughts on Mike Muscala?
Yeah, a lot has to go wrong for Atlanta for Muscala to get some minutes. The way I say it, he's a watch list guy. I remember, I think last season at some stage, I streamed him into my team for a couple of games where he had a decent run of games. But yeah, he's definitely, chuck him on. He's worth putting on your watch list. He might get a couple of good games if someone gets injured. Stream him in. But I wouldn't be counting on something like that to happen unless Splitter gets injured.
This is deeper league stuff, and it's like doomsday scenario. But there are some guys who, when they get minutes, can't do anything. But if Muscala gets minutes, the stats are going to be there. So he's a name that you have to remember. When you see the Hawks run out of the lineup and go, and people go, Mike Muscala, this guy's garbage, they're going to get smashed, just ignore that and just remember Mike Muscala has fantasy numbers written all over him if he's in the situation. So he's a name that if you see that he starts, then you need to pay attention and go, all right, let's look at Mike Muscala now. And Daily Fantasy, you absolutely smash him in Daily Fantasy. And Joey, quick mention of Daily Fantasy. Daily Fantasy coming to Australia. How excited are you?
Time to quit my job and become a permanent DFS player.
It is definitely pretty exciting. So, moneyball.com.au is doing DFS in Australia and it's going to be great for us, all us guys who were sitting on the outside looking in at everyone in the States having fun with DFS. Hopefully we're going to be able to, take some money, and I'll definitely be setting up some Red Rock listener contests on Moneyball this season. And hopefully you won't be taking all of my money, but we'll be having some interesting contests on there, and I can't wait for it to start.
Yeah, it'd be good to finally put some of this basketball knowledge we have to good use.
Exactly. Let's, you know who we haven't talked about? Probably the best player on this team is Paul Millsap. We haven't really spoken about him. Now, it's probably debatable whether he's the best player, but from a fantasy point of view, he's the rare player who basically does nothing wrong. He doesn't do anything fantastically well, but he doesn't do anything wrong. He's a positive contributor in 7 of 8 categories. His field goal percentage is a bit low for a power forward. I got him projected at 47% this year, and that's not horrible. That can still be a positive contribution, but he's a guy that is a triple one threat. Definitely he's going to be a guy that gets close to a 3 a steal and a block a game. He's actually an awesome source of steals for a big man. One of the top stealing big men in the league, up with Nerlens Noel and Thaddeus Young. He averaged last season 1.8 steals as a big man. His last two games, he actually got 5 steals. That's probably not sustainable, but he's close to a 2-steal-a-game guy. He was 1.7 the season before. He is a legit triple one guy that we need to pay attention to. His Yahoo ADP is 21, and in a roto league, you should be smashing that because he is top 10 roto potential, in my opinion. His ability to contribute in every category is absolutely gold. He's not hurting you anywhere. He's providing stellar out-of-position stats for those steals. In a head-to-head league, it's probably about right. I've got him ranked a little bit lower than that just because he's not really standing out in many categories. But Paul Millsap is a fantasy stud, and if you grab him in the second round, you can't be wrong.
Yeah, the fact that he gets almost 2 steals a game as a power forward player, that's ridiculous. That's close to, you'd have to be in the top 10 or roundabouts in steals in the league. And to get that from your power forward, it's just, yeah, it's awesome. I'd be all over that.
Not many people do that.
At the end of the first round in roto leagues for sure.
Oh, and absolutely.
And if I can get him in the second round in head-to-head leagues, you'd be laughing.
If his draft position is 21, if you're picking at pick 10 and you get him in your second round at pick whatever it is, 14, 15, that sort of range, it's significant value. In the second round, in a head-to-head, again, it depends on which way you're going to go. You know, in some situations, you might favor grabbing a Rudy Gobert, but Paul Millsap is solid. He's been doing this for 4 or 5 years, these sort of numbers. We know sort of what we're going to get from him. And it's very good. And so there's just no downside to getting him. Now, we talked about the top guys in steals, and while we're talking, I looked that up. He was right up there in terms of his steal numbers, and the screen's just disappeared on me. He finished 10th in steals per game last season. The only big men ahead of him were nobody. He was the highest rated power forward. He was equal with Nerlens Noel at 1.8 steals a game last season. Above him, Kawhi Leonard, Westbrook, Curry, Tony Allen, Chris Paul, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Monte Ellis, Ricky Rubio. Then we had Millsap and Nerlens Noel. So the best big man at steals, equal with Noel, that is super valuable.
Yeah, he gives you numbers you'd expect from a wing player as well. Like he averages a lot of assists for a power forward. I think it's close to maybe 3 a game.
Yep, he averaged 3.1 last season, yep.
Yeah, so to be able to get that as well from your power forward, like his out-of-position stats are crazy.
And his percentages are all looking at 48 from the field, 76 from the line, 36 from three. They don't hurt you, they don't help you massively, but they just keep you just floating right where you need to be. And then add in those steals, which is the steals are his best category, that's his best value, but you know, he's positive in blocks, points, rebounds, threes. It's all very, very good for Paul Millsap. And that transitions me into the next question, is who's my favorite player on this team? And it is Paul Millsap. I'm a big Paul Millsap fan. I love what he's able to do from a versatility standpoint. He can play some 3, some 4, and some 5. But who's your favorite player on this team, Joey?
It'd be either Korver or Millsap.
That's look, this team's got a lot of likable players.
I'm really big on efficient percentages in the head-to-head leagues I play in. So I like guys that aren't Tony Roden, pretty much.
Yeah, I can get behind that as well. I'm definitely pro everyone that's not Tony Roden. Tony Roden is brutal.
Yeah, I like my guys who can hit threes, won't shoot below 42% from the field. So, yeah. Millsap and Korver are my guys.
This team's full of likable players. Like, I really like Millsap. Huge fan of Horford, Jeff Teague, Dennis Schroeder. I like what Splitter can do. Kyle Korver. I like so many players in this team. And I think there was one stage, not last season, but the season before, I had 5 Hawks on one of my teams. I had all of them. I had Teague, Korver, Carroll, Millsap, and Horford. I had them all. I think I drafted them all. And a lot of people would say that's stupid to have 5 guys from one team, but I got them all at significant good value. I think I got Horford in the 2nd round, Millsap in the 3rd round, Teague in the 5th round, Korver in the 10th round, and Carroll in the last round or something like that. And I was
they've got four elite guys fantasy wise in their team, and you can get them at the right point of the draft.
It's not
drafting players in the same team isn't an issue.
No, it's not like playing fantasy football where you got bye weeks to worry about. It doesn't matter as much in fantasy, but yeah, look, you're not going to have 9 players from one team because A, they're not going to be good enough, and B, then you're going to have situations where you're going to have so many days where you don't fill enough empty gaps. But 4 or 5 is not a problem, and there's not many teams that can actually hold 5 standard league relevant players. The Hawks were one; they're probably not this year. They're down to 4, but I've got no issue if it fits and it makes sense to grab them at that spot, do it. And it's not, I have no issue with that. And some people will be going, the max I want to do is 2. I completely don't, I don't buy into that at all. Now, this is the question, Joey, that everyone is waiting to hear. I've been tweeting out the last couple of shows for people to guess who my favorite all-time player is. I'm going to let you go first, though, and give me your favorite all-time player.
It has to be one person and one person only. Dikembe Mutombo.
He was my Nuggets guy.
I've gone for the fact that he played for the Hawks for a bit, and I've pulled out some of his stats from his best season as a Hawk.
Go bring it.
The 96-97 season, he averaged 13 points, just under 12 rebounds, a little over 3 blocks. He averaged 1 finger wave a game. 52% from the field and 70% from the line. I like those numbers.
I'll let you have a chance to guess who my favorite Hawks player is.
It could be a number. I like Spud Webb for the fact that a guy that's shorter than me can dunk.
Yes, Spud Webb was up there, but no, he's not the answer.
Dominic Wilkins?
Dominic was 1B. We'll talk Dominic because he was amazing. Like, the scoring that he was able to put up was fantastic throughout his career. He had a couple of seasons of averaging 30 points a game. He had a stretch of about 10 years in a row of averaging 25 points or more. Solid rebounder, good percentage guy, a 45 to 48% guy, 80% from the line. Obviously, highlight dunks were huge with him. We know his nickname, one of the best nicknames of all time as well.
Is your favorite Hawk player Jared Rufford?
Come on, Joey. I'm not Hawthorne. Oh, I've got nothing to do with Hawthorne. You're a Hawthorne fan, aren't you?
I did, and I had to sneak in a reference to the Hawthorne AFL team in this podcast somewhere, so I figured that was a nice spot to put it in.
Big win for them last night over Matt Smith's team. The Crows dismantled them in the first quarter, so big task now heading over to Western Australia to take on the Dockers. Do you think you guys have got a chance over there?
Playing Fremantle in Perth is a tough task.
No, hang on, you're playing Fremantle. You're playing West Coast, aren't you? No, West Coast.
No, you're playing Fremantle.
Are you?
We got hammered by West Coast the week before.
I'm trying to. Oh, that's right. Sorry, yeah, my bad. You're playing Fremantle. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's
yeah. Back to NBA.
Back to NBA. Back to the big reveal of my favorite player. Dominic was close, but I'm going to give a shout out to Tandez on Twitter, who guessed my favorite Hawks player of all time, and that's Stacey Augmon.
Ah, yes.
Now, I talked about Dominic Wilkins having one of the best nicknames of all time. Stacey Augmon has the greatest nickname of all time, Plastic Man. He just looked cool on the court. I don't know what it was about him. His really long arms, his super sort of athleticness, his defense, the fact that when you got a pack of NBA cards in the early 90s, he was the first guy there because his name started with A. A lot of all that stuff factored in. But he had some pretty solid seasons for Atlanta. But once he left Atlanta, he just became useless. I don't really know how. Look, he dropped from his last season in Atlanta, 12.7 points. First season in Detroit, 4.7. That's a big drop off. But he was, you know, he had one nice top 60 season where he was a 15-point guy, five rebounds, 2.5 assists, almost two steals, half a block, good percentages. I thought he was destined for something a lot bigger than what he ended up being. But Stacey Augmon is my favorite guy, and a lot of that was reinvigorated when I went across to Vegas and saw his jersey hanging in the banner at Thomas & Mack at UNLV as a retired jersey. I was a big Stacey Augmon fan, and a lot of that is because of his nickname as well. And one of the Red Rock Listen League that I'm in is called the Stacey Augmon Division as well. So the people in that league should have had some sort of clue.
My next guess was going to be Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, big fan of Mookie Blaylock as well. A lot of that's to do with the Pearl Jam references as well to him, because I'm a big Pearl Jam fan as well. So big Mookie has a lot of respect in that sense, just because of his influence in naming the band.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we're done, Joey. Who else do we need to touch on? Anything else for the Hawks? They've still got Austin Day on their roster. You got some insightful thoughts on Austin Day?
Austin Day. All he's good for is posting emoticons on Twitter.
Is he a good Twitter follower, is he?
He hasn't got a big following, but his emoticon to text ratio is pretty much even.
I'm going to follow him now. I hadn't followed him before. I was a guy that about 4 or 5 years ago, I was like, you know what, Austin Day, when he was at the Pistons, he's going to start, he's going to be really fantasy friendly. And I still maintain that if he was just given big minutes, he can actually put up really good fantasy numbers. He's like one of the original triple one sort of guys, a block of three, a steal a game. We saw what he did in San Antonio in those two starts he had in about two seasons where he just went out there and go, okay, I'm starting. I'm going to go 22-10 with 6 threes and 3 steals. And you go, what the hell's going on? Where did this guy come from? And then he just does nothing. Massive Austin Day fan, completely for no reason at all. I just think that he was a guy that I just had so much hope invested into him. And I just go, I want him to get minutes, and I want him because I think if he did, he was going to be able to put up big numbers. It just didn't happen, unfortunately. So that my Austin Day prediction didn't work out.
Yeah, I'm the same. He's the kind of guy that you could see he has the tools to become a good player, but he just can't work it out.
I don't know what it is about him. I don't know why he can't get it going. I know he's very frail. He's quite sort of weak, but I don't know. I just wish he could get out there because he's like a. He's one of the guys who was a stretch four before stretch fours became stretch fours. Like, he could go out there and hit threes. That was his big strength. And he'd get blocks, and he'd get steals, and he'd get rebounds. And it just didn't work out, which is disappointing. But you know what? If for some reason he gets a start and he's going to play 30 minutes, the odds are that the numbers are going to be big for one game. You just got to sort of bank on when that's going to be. And maybe you throw him into a daily fantasy lineup if for some reason the Hawks are resting players, which is a possibility. And they go, we're going to run a starting lineup of Kent Bazemore, Dennis Schroeder, Austin Day. Then you go, ooh, you know what? There's a little bit of something here to like here. And that's how we'll leave the podcast, on a little bit of false hope for Austin Day. Joey, give all your websites a plug once more and tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
Find me on Twitter at #basketball. And you can find my website if you just Google the word hashtag basketball. You can find my website there. And if you've registered your interest for allstar5.com, I'm going to be emailing out some invites to do some beta testing in probably the next 15 minutes.
Cool. So if you did register that, look out for those emails and let's get that thing started. It's going to be exciting to do. I'll give a quick shout out to Basketball Monster. Head across and check out what's happening over there. Interact on the forums. Check out the projections, the draft trackers, all that sort of stuff. And of course, Hardwood Paroxysm. We're going to have our NBA preview magazine out in the next month, to which I'm writing a few articles in that. So keep an eye out for that. Check out the other podcasts on the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcast Center. The Over and Back podcast, looking into the history of the NBA. That's some good stuff there. There's the Timberwolves podcast, the Miami Heat podcast on there as well, and a few other Nylon Calculus does some stuff. There's a number of podcasts at the HP Podcast Center, so check out all of that stuff follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball and leave a review on iTunes. You know how much that that does help the program. And subscribe on YouTube. And you can watch these podcasts live on YouTube if you're not already doing so and able to chime in during the show as Glenn did earlier on with his Dennis Schroeder stat. And I'm always welcome contributions like that as we're recording live. Joey, it's been good to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.